Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a combined project of KCBX and our team of program hosts. Today on Central Coast Voices, joining Fred Monroe is Andrew Pridgen, the Central California editor for SF Gate. They're going to take a look at how SF Gate, one of the most widely read online news sites in California, has expanded their coverage to smaller communities throughout the state. SF Gate is now regularly reporting on Central Coast stories, giving Bay Area readers a broad perspective of our region. You are invited to listen and learn. Our program is recorded today, so we can't take your phone calls. But as always, you can email any follow-up questions to voices@kcbx.org. With that, let's join Fred Monroe and his guest. Over to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be with you today. Central Coast Voices has had a chance to talk about to a lot of people on a lot of different topics. I am an avid news reader and read both regional and local news on a regular basis. It came to my attention over a year ago that SF Gate, one of my favorite publications, which is really one of the second largest or second widest read online publication in the Western United States, second only to the LA Times, has local reporting. This came about because I actually read a story about a local deli in San Luis Obispo on SF Gate before I heard anything about that similar topic locally. And that kind of got me looking at whether or not we really have, I guess, if you will, a news source that's local to San Luis Obispo in ways that is surprising. A little bit of history. SF Gate is owned by the Hearst Newspaper Corporation. Yes, that's the descendants of the William Randolph Hearst legacy that we know about on the Central Coast because of Hearst Castle. For a long time, SF Gate was tied to the daily paper of San Francisco, the San Francisco Chronicle. They are still owned by the same people. However, they are run as completely separate operations. Lo and behold, when I went to do some exploration about this story and was introduced to Andrew Pridgen, P-R-I-D-G-E-N, he is the Central California editor for SF Gate. That's an evolutionary step up for him from formerly being the Central Coast editor, even though he still has both of those roles. Andrew is in the studio with us today, and we're going to get some insights into not only what it's like to write coverage for a major publication for a regional area, and also how that is tied together, because one of the curiosities that I've had from day one about this is if you happen to be a San Francisco resident and reader or anywhere in the Bay Area and you read a story about something that's going on this little Central Coast community somewhere, I suspect that's a way of looking at the Central Coast that you may not look at on a regular basis. For an awful lot of Bay Area people, we're just the other wine region. Andrew, thanks for joining me. It's been an interesting discussion and evolution for us to get to this point, because lo and behold, when I invited you to be on the program, my assumption was that we may have to do this by Zoom or phone because you were not locally based, but it turns out you actually reside in Los Osos, and so you get to be the coverage and the eyes and ears for SF Gate locally, even though that's considered a Bay Area publication. How did this evolve for you?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Fred. It evolved, I guess, to start with a cliche, sort of organically. Grant Merrick, who's the editor-in-chief of SF Gate and has been there since 2019, had the idea pretty close to when he came in as editor in 2020 to go with an expansion format for parts of California and the rest of the West. What that entailed is he started by hiring a friend and longtime colleague of mine named Julie Brown Davis. She was born and raised in Lake Tahoe and has reported on Lake Tahoe and the Mountain West for the entirety of her career. Grant, I think, recognized her as an asset that could be based in Lake Tahoe and report on Lake Tahoe. And if you recall, back in 2020. That was right when COVID started, and they wanted and needed someone up in Lake Tahoe region who could talk about, at that point, there were a lot of people who were moving there from the Bay Area, relocating. There was just so many changes going on at once, and she was the person to report on that. Since then, the expansion program has expanded even more to Hawaii and then Disneyland theme parks, and then the Central Coast was up next after that. I was hired in late 2021. And I think Grant's notion at the time was Big Sur was a place not unlike Tahoe that people knew and visited and weekended at, but also were exploring more during an era when people were sort of deciding whether or not they wanted to stay in the cities, right? And so I was sort of hired ostensibly as a Big Sur expert, which I am not. but soon,
do we need to blip that part from the program your editors don't hear that?
It's a running joke at this point. I didn't position myself, by the way, as a total Big Sur expert. I think I know enough about Big Sur and have visited enough, but I wasn't living there, and I believed then, as I do now, that the Central Coast was clearly more than Big Sur. I have lived in Los Osos for more than a decade, and lived in SLO for a few years more than that. And whether it's Santa Barbara or Cayucas or Santa Cruz, our coverage area goes all the way down to Oxnard on the coast. There's just so many places that are so unique and have so many wonderful things going on and face so many problems and existential crises that I just felt then, as I do now, that there was more than enough territory to cover. And then eventually, as you mentioned, that also expanded into the Central Valley.
So you have a publication that reaches between 25 and 30 million readers a month.
Yes.
Second only to the LA Times.
We're actually, knock on wood, we've been number one for a number of months now.
Okay.
But who's counting, right?
Okay. It's unusual from the standpoint of a Central Coast resident. I'm an escapee from L.A., but that was 50 years ago.
Right.
And I spend probably more time in San Francisco now than I ever do in Los Angeles. So
right.
San Francisco is kind of the environment I'm in. I believe that may be why I discovered SFGate in the first place. It was like, oh, there's this interesting online publication that's kind of, at the time, was kind of an extension of the San Francisco Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back far enough. That I found it fascinating, and to this day it has stuck in my head that it is fascinating that a publication of that magnitude puts boots on the ground in San Luis Obispo on a regular basis. I mean, I see your byline very often, sometimes in unusual situations. You did a very interesting story on Tejon Ranch,
mm-hmm.
which I think my comment to you was when we were talking about this was a fascinating slant on what could have been an incredibly boring story about a corporate struggle over the ownership, over the use of some of that property. How much feedback do you get on a reasonably regular basis from people who are in this region who realize either historically or as they read more of what you write, that indeed this is a publication that is giving as much focus to things that are happening on the Central Coast as it does any place else in California?
I get a lot of feedback. I would say it's equally split between people saying, I'll paraphrase, we didn't get it right, or I didn't do it exactly the way that they would want. And I get, like I said, an equal amount of feedback from people who are encouraging, who are grateful that we're here. We live in an era of rapidly declining news sources. We live in an era of news deserts. There are at least two counties in California that have no daily or weekly newspaper right now. I think Grant's role, and as an extension, everyone who works in that newsroom's role, is to try to make sure that we can, the best we can, like you said, be boots on the ground, be active in our communities, be active as a service first. But yeah, we can't, and I can't be everywhere at once. And, you know, a big reason why we plan and work on stories, I just turned in a summer and fall pitch doc to my editors. And so we plan things out 3-6 months in advance, sometimes a year in advance. Sometimes stories take a year and a half to work on. And the reason why we do that is the Tejon Ranch is a great example. I've wanted to do something on Tejon Ranch for more than a year, besides the fact that it's there and people know it sort of when they drive by it. What's the angle there? What's really going to hook, like you said, a general public or a mass reading audience into wanting to know more about Tejon Ranch? And, you know, they've had a recent history in April, May of an activist investor who started a proxy war. And we did a lot of educating internally about what a proxy war actually is, what it means when a hedge fund is trying to come in and get a foothold and maybe have designs on eventual takeover and what that means. I think people who watched HBO's Succession might have an idea of what that's about. But for the general public, it's really, you know, walking them through what this means and walking them through what it means for a 270,000-acre parcel of private land, the largest contiguous parcel of private land in the state, which is bigger than most national parks here, right? And what that means for the kit foxes and the California condors and the bobcats and the bears and the streams that run through there, and you know what it means when something is publicly traded, but it's this beautiful and vast and ecologically varied piece of land. And so when we kind of reverse engineer those stories, we take all those elements, we take the part that's, you know, sort of newsworthy now, and then we try to, you know, kind of put it all together in something that people can read on their phones in less than a minute.
I read most of SFGate not on my phone a lot longer than a minute.
That's very nice. Yeah.
So when these kind of stories come up, how often is this kind of story become something that is found by you as newsworthy and found by your editors in San Francisco as newsworthy? We'll get into it in more details among other things, but the fact that you indeed are residing and working on a daily basis far away from your main newsroom, I think it probably affects how this flow works for everybody.
Yeah, it really does. I think because I wasn't the first person on the expansion team and that they had one up and running for about a year prior to when I started, they kind of worked out a lot of the kinks ahead of time. And then we were also kind of coming up with this tack at the beginning of COVID when remote work was becoming more and more accessible, right? But it's a work in progress every day. We have a morning editors meeting where everyone gets on a Microsoft Teams meeting, or the people who are in the office that day gather around in the conference room. And we go editor by editor, and we break down kind of what they're working on, what the status is of what they're working on, what they have in mind. That's kind of when we do our pitches. And so, you know, one of the first things we do when a story comes up, you know, whether it's breaking news or something, you know, we want to do for a long-term effort, is we bounce it off basically the entire newsroom. And it's tough to gauge people a little bit when you're on the camera or on the screen, but when the room falls silent with one of your pitches, that's a pretty good indicator. It's almost like doing stand-up, right? When you pause for that laugh line or that applause line, and there's no reaction, I usually quickly move on. Sometimes if it's – you brought up Gus's Grocery Closer, and I had a tip from a friend that Gus's was winding down in November, December. They had some health inspection violations that made the local news, and they recovered from those, but businesses what just wasn't the same. So I went in the last week of December, and I had a sandwich there and just kind of reported on that. To me, it is still, even in its absence, the quintessential slow sandwich. And I know we have wonderful sandwich choices here I'm fans of all of them. But to me, Gus's Grocery was one of the first, and if not the best. And I took my little boy there, and we had lunch, and I kind of reported on that. Plus the history, we have a tremendous access to archives. So I think I pulled information from the 50s, 60s, 70s sort of thing, you know, when Gus's was maybe at the height of its popularity. And then I got a tip about a month and a half later that it was indeed shuttered. And maybe to answer your question a little bit, does the Bay Area and our greater readership respond to those stories? Absolutely. Because I think everyone has a Gus's Grocery in their town that they've had to say goodbye to over the last couple of years.
Your direct editor, from my notes and the information you've provided with me, is Fiona Lee.
Fiona Lee, yes.
Okay. So I suspect if you have stories that need a pitch, with a few exceptions to this, you probably need to pitch them to her first. So
yes.
When you give me an idea of how you pitch the closing of a small deli in San Luis Obispo to your editor in San Francisco, in a fashion that they can understand the significance of it, because my first thought might be, gee, how in the world does that play into what our average reader is gonna read, and how many people close the website when a story like that pops up because it just doesn't have any connection for them?
Right. Yeah, Fiona and I have been working together in this capacity for almost 4 years, and I'd say in a lot of ways we're very opposite in our approach to things. I think a little more, I don't want to say mercurial, but it comes to mind. I'm very quickly agitated with things, right? I'm very things mean a lot to me right away, and it's probably a part of my personality that I should learn how to delete at some point. And Fiona is very calm. She's like still water. She's like, okay, like I'll pitch a story like that to her. And she's like, okay, how important is Gus's? Show me how important it is. You know, you can tell me about it. You can describe to me the great sandwich that you had there when you first moved to SLO. But you know, let's see a little bit of evidence. And you know, we'll go back and forth a little bit. We just had our sort of quarterly pitch meeting yesterday. And again, sometimes I pitch her an idea and the air goes out of the room, and it's something I'm super excited about. And then other times, you know, she'll ask me a few follow-up questions because I think she knows me at this point, and we'll get there with the story. She's just very helpful. I think she, along with Katie Dowd, who's our managing editor, and a whole host of other folks who work in that newsroom, are very good at sort of seeing top line, what the story is, what it's going to mean to people, what it's going to mean to our audience at large, and then really drilling in and trying to find a way to relate all that. So it's not a one-person endeavor by any means. There are, on any given day, by the time, you know, one of my stories, a feature especially, reaches the homepage, a dozen people who've had a hand in there. So even though my name's on it, it's still a very collaborative effort and probably the type of collaboration that you don't get a lot anymore in newsrooms.
Yeah. A lot of what gets written about the Central Coast and California generally in the Western United States by SFGate is more travel and tourism oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you have a couple of travel editors. Does their work tie in a lot with what you're doing? Because this is, for lack of a better way of putting it, a short-term, easy turnaround travel stop for an awful lot of people. And Paso Robles and the region generally, but Paso Robles specifically, has really gotten on the heels of Napa in a way that everybody... I talk about the great restaurants on the Central Coast, and my friends from out of the area say, but what's their wine like?
Huh.
It's well, that's not the top focus for me, but it is for an awful lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Silas Valentino is the name of our travel editor, and he's, again, a really fine coworker and a great friend. And he's also, because this is his area of expertise, he's also really good at dialing in, especially if I pitch a story to him that is more travel-oriented. Just for example, we're in the beginning of June right now, so a lot of my beat is going to be travel focused through Labor Day. So Silas is intrinsically connected to, again, everything from pitch to the final execution. As far as Central Coast goes, being a hub, I think it ebbs and flows a little bit too. I think, you know, some of our more successful travel stories of the last, I want to say maybe year and a half or 2 year cycle have been about what places on the Central Coast aren't being visited right now, which I think is equally, if not more so important. We've done two stories over that time span about San Simeon and some of the surrounding towns, probably including Cambria and a little bit of Cayucas, that have been affected by the Highway 1 closure. And I think we've led coverage on that. We've seen our coverage emulated by other major publications. Same with Big Sur, how they've been impacted. We've covered that since the early January storms of 2023, and we will continue to cover it this summer. So Silas and Fiona both are really, I would say, involved in what that coverage looks like on a daily basis, because not only is there Caltrans news every day, but there's news of businesses closing, there's news of tourism being down. It's really sometimes difficult, almost emotionally, to parse, knowing that there's a big section right where you live that's known for its visitors, both regionally, statewide, nationwide, and internationally, that's really struggling. And I think one of the things we do try to do is shine the light on those areas as much as the changes that are going on with Southwest Airlines or the new wing that's going into SFO or LAX.
So the tie to the area for Bay Area readers is pretty significant. As SF Gate, and I'm waiting for you to change your name someday, because I'm wondering if somebody's going to say, okay, this is, that SF does not give us enough information about who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how that transition goes, but the whole concept of whether or not you are just mostly a Bay Area audience is fallen by the wayside, rightfully so, which is to the kudos to you for being able to do that, because otherwise people would just say, oh, this is another San Francisco newspaper that doesn't apply to me. That becomes a tug of war, I suspect, to some extent with Bay Area people who say, oh, this stuff is not Bay Area enough. How come we're hearing about Gus's Grocery in San Luis Obispo? I'm wondering what kind of – do you get a lot of – my hunch is that your average feedback is probably by email, because your email address is indeed on the website and easy to find.
Right.
probably to your benefit, your phone number is not.
yes.
So I'm wondering what kind of nature of the feedback is that the average reader – who's not that regionally oriented,
right?
Sees.
I guess is my question back to you is this about feedback we get from someone who lives in Antioch, for example, and doesn't have any connection to the Central Coast and wonders why they're reading about a random sandwich shop or a deli or a motel that's struggling?
You probably get two different types in my mind. That mm-hmm. is the ones who want more information about where they live.
Right.
Gee whiz, I live in Walnut Creek, and I haven't seen a Walnut Creek story in a month, but I'm seeing stories about a deli in San Luis Obispo.
Sure.
You get that standpoint. And the flip side is people who just wonder why it's even important in the first place.
Yeah, I think there's maybe two answers to that. I'll see if I can do them quickly.
We have plenty of time.
Part of that answer comes from my own experience. I was born in the Bay Area in Mountain View. My family moved to the Central Valley to Bakersfield when I was about two, and I grew up there till I was 14, till the end of junior high, and then we moved back to the Bay Area to Northern Marin County, and I went to high school there, and then I pretty much after college, I lived in either San Francisco or LA for a spell, Oakland, Berkeley, Lake Tahoe, and even Utah for a minute, and Oregon for a little bit. And I just felt like even when I returned to live in SLO about 12 or 13 years ago, I just felt that my experience in growing up and who I knew was as a Californian, not necessarily as a Bay Area person or a Central Coast person or a Central California person or even an LA person. Like you, I contain multitudes. I think Californians contain multitudes, right? We do have regional favorites, I think, and we do have regional identifiers, whether it's through sports teams or, you know, a band that grew up in your town or, you know, someone famous you grew up with. But I think a lot of us understand that we're one giant organism in California. And so I think that leads me to answer the second part of the question as I parsed it. Like, I think the majority of our readers, at least from what I've seen so far, and I'll probably say this and then get the exact opposite feedback next week. But I think the majority of our readers, they went to Cal Poly, right? Or they went to Cuesta, or they went to Santa Barbara City, or they went to UCSB, or they went to Santa Cruz, or they went to Bakersfield College, you know, or they went to Fresno State. So a lot of like how we identify ourselves, or their grandparents grew up in Modesto, right? Or their aunt and uncle had a vacation home in Capitola. So a lot of us are, I think, deeply rooted in one place or another, as people tend to get. But I think there's a huge understanding that, like us, this state also contains multitudes. And so I think there's a built-in interest in that, or at least I want to believe that there's a built-in interest like that.
You mentioned in your information you shared with me that your first journalism position was with the Contra Costa Times.
That's right.
Okay, so that you may have had some of the same tugs back and forth with that, because that's a very small newspaper, weekly newspaper, in a small side community, if you will, of the Bay Area. So sorting out making that publication interesting for local readers, but keeping it tied to the area, I suspect was probably a good learning curve.
Yeah, I started out on kind of a cattle call hiring process for the Contra Costa Times and Contra Costa newspapers. And what had happened is a lot of their newsroom had recently been plundered by the dot-com 1.0 companies. Okay. So the eBays, the Yahoos of the world, this is even pre-Google, or there was like Webvan and a sports equipment website called FogDog, and they literally went in and poached, I'm going to make up a number, but I think, you know, 40 or 50 people as sort of, I think, what we refer to now as like content creators, right? Mm-hmm. They needed people probably just to write copy or to, you know, help spin up these websites. And so my first interview was, I don't know if you've ever seen like the movie Boiler Room, where they just put all these young people in a big conference room and they say like, yeah, you're hired. And I just barely filled out my resume. And I think a lot of the people, some of them turned out, actually most of them turned out to be incredible professionals. Some are still writing, but we were young and eager, and I was given, I was sent to, there was a weekly sort of subgroup, and I was sent to become the Cops and Corpse reporter in Martinez, California. And my first day on the job, I went to my editor and I said, I don't know what to do. And she said, go to the police station. They'll fill you in. And so I started reporting on crime and quickly realized that there really, as cliche as it is, there really is no story that's too small or too local, especially in crime. Right. Yeah. Like there's a lot of things that people are deeply curious about.
Yeah. Good to think about. We're going to take a break. I'm having a wonderful time talking with Andrew Pridgen, who is the Central Coast editor for SF Gate, a fascinating regional publication that is probably the most read online news source in the Western United States these days. And we're going to talk more about how the perspective of this large organization and his work as a Central Coast editor fits in with what journalism is on the Central Coast and what journalism is generally. This is Central Coast Voices. We're glad you're with us today, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to you. It's to you, Brad, in the studio.
And thank you very much, Fred. Efforts to eliminate public media funding have reached an all-time high. The White House has issued a memorandum asking Congress to claw back partisan-approved funds for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For 50 years, KCBX has been one of the best local sources of news, great music, community connection, and life-saving emergency alerts. All of that is at risk because of these proposed federal cuts. You can help by calling your representative, even if you've already done it. So it's important to raise your voice again. Learn how to do that at kcbx.org. Ahead today on our KCBX Thursday here on KCBX, it's Fresh Air from 3 to 4, followed by Marketplace from 4 to 4:30, and then it's All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30, leading to an evening of music that gets underway on the road home with Marisa Waddell. Right now, let's return to Fred Monroe and his guest on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Fred.
Thank you, Brad. I'm glad you're with us today. I want to remind folks that this is a pre-recorded program. As much as we love to do it live whenever we can, the week of Live Oak made it tough to do a live program also. But we're gonna take your messages and comments by letting us know at voices@kcbx.org, because we certainly can't do call-in today. But we would love to hear about your thoughts on this program, and we'll pass them on to Andrew Pridgen, who's the Central California editor for SFGate, is with me, and we'll share your comments with him also. The stuck in the back of my head since this discussion with you started is the largest private landholder, to my knowledge, in San Luis County is the Hearst family.
That's right.
The castle belongs to the state now. Mm-hmm. Most of the land around it still belongs to the family. And the Hearst Media Corporation, or Hearst Newspapers, indeed is the owners of SFGate, that because SFGate became an offshoot, if you will, of the San Francisco Chronicle over time. Does that get you interesting questions and skepticism from locals on a regular basis? Or on any basis, if you will, sorry.
I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever directly received questions from local readers, or even when I'm out and about doing interviews about our connections with Hearst. People are busy. They have full lives. And, you know, I don't know if the connection is always obvious. I think where it does manifest is when we're reporting on San Simeon, for example. I had one encounter with a gentleman, and about how the area had been experiencing a slowdown post the Highway 1 closure, which I mentioned, and we really got into it. And he was involved with the wine industry, and I had a great interview, and was kind of wrapping it up and ready to move on, and he's like, P.S. My name is XYZ, and suddenly I understood that this interview might be a conflict of interest. So I went back to my editors and, you know, full disclosure to them, and that did not make it in the story. But the Hearst family is ubiquitous in this area. They've been, like you said, they've been here since William Randolph Hearst was here, and they are, I think, you know, stewards of a lot of land here. And It's a big family, and they have many interests in many things that have nothing to do with news or newspapers or online publications. And that much is made pretty clear to us. But yes,
cattle and wine.
Cattle and wine are two of the things. Yeah. Yes, we have to, I guess, sorry, that was a very meandering answer. Yes, we have to always, especially here on the Central Coast, be running an audit on how we report this region, not because they're the owners. I want to be very clear about that. They do not and would never dictate our coverage based on what property they hold here. But we absolutely do have to disclose that we are a Hearst publication, especially when, you know, something happens, you know, on our radar that has to do with the family or their holdings.
Yeah, it's well presented. When I was doing research for the program, and it's very, very easy to find out the connection. It's very easy to both through the website for SFGate and other publications and Wikipedia to know what the connections are to the media of Hearst Corporation. The biggest surprise to me is I always thought of Hearst Corporation as being completely San Francisco based, and then I discovered that I guess the headquarters for the larger corporation is in New York, which surprised me.
That is correct. The headquarters is in New York. There are specific reasons that we have to talk to the New York folks sometimes, and it's a big, it's, yeah, what can I say? It is a big major corporation, and they are not just California based, but I do believe that when it comes to, you know, their interest in California and who they are, and again, I can't speak for anyone in the Hearst family, and nor would I ever try
don't,
to.
Don't expect you to.
But I would say California and their California roots, and especially their roots in this part of the state, are deeply, deeply connected today. Yeah.
Back to the topic of how SF Gate's perspective fits into the Central Coast and fits into your reporting. Can we give you an interesting example? One of the things that gets most seen in Rome on a regular basis is the Spanish Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to see the Spanish Steps. I've been there. I've talked to people in Italy about the fact they still can't figure out why that's so doggone interesting to people. It's just a set of steps. That's the best example I can use, because my thought is, and the question from my perspective is, how often and in what fashion do you discover that locals on the Central Coast and in Central Valley, Central California generally,
mm-hmm.
have a limited perspective as to what's important in the area? I've talked to people who live in Paso Robles who don't realize that Paso Robles has one of the best downtowns for restaurants and just places to socialize in the state of California, if not the country. But I talk to a lot of locals who say, oh, I never go there, it's just too crowded with tourists. So they don't see any value in it as locals. Does that come up often when you're reporting?
I think so. I think we always have time or have a tendency, whether it's a relationship or a job or, you know, we are all just struggling trying to get through the day to day and don't often see what's coming for us or the wave crashing right behind us. Right. I think we're all guilty of that. And the same, I think, can be said for the incredible things that we have that are right in front of us. I think that kind of reminds me of a lot of the reporting I do in the Central Valley. Bakersfield, for example, has this just one-of-a-kind corridor or little neighborhood called Old Town Kern. And in Old Town Kern, which is kind of a buzzword that they've put on, you know, sort of the eastern East Bakersfield part of downtown, there are three or four notable restaurants that are, you know, some are more than 100, 115 years old. One is called Luigi's Delicatessen. One is Arizona Cafe, one of the first you know, Mexican restaurants in that town, and you know, a notable one in California, Wool Growers, a notable Basque restaurant, Pyrenees Bakery, which has been doing sourdough bread in Bakersfield and Kern County for 135 plus years. Pyrenees Cafe, which is not associated with a bakery, but has been doing Basque food for just about as long. And if you live or grow up in Bakersfield, or even if you drive through there, you're probably not going to make a huge effort to go there. You know it's there. But when you go there, there's people from all over the world there because they've read about it, they've heard about it, someone tipped them off, they saw a Yelp review, whatever. And it's just like, yeah, how could I can't think of a more overlooked, you know, maybe by many of the locals and yet highly sought after two block radius in California than this. And notable too, notable for its own excellence.
What's been your biggest surprise from a standpoint of the Central Coast folks on what they have here that they don't even notice?
Oh, wow. That's that feels like a big trap question for the Central Coast audience, right? I don't want to blow up anyone's spot. I would say...
We won't give out your email address. Okay.
I would say, you know, there are so many things that... people here are hyper aware of. We did the McClintock's closure a little over a year ago. And even though, I'll use that as an example, even though I think everyone who's lived here and gone to more than one farmer's market or had more than one steak birthday dinner knows what McClintock's is, or went there with an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, a coworker, whatever, went to the one in Slo for a drink, or went to the one, you know, in Paso when it was there briefly. But I don't think people really understood the full history of McClintock's and how influential it was to this sort of California-style steakhouse, right? And what an institution it was. And that's where my job comes in to say, well, not only is this going away, at least for now, but here's the full history. Here's what you missed. And... that's maybe one of the positive aspects of my job, is when we do a more full, deeper dive into something that unfortunately maybe is gone, and people do realize, like, oh, it's not just the place where, you know, my grandpa took me to. There was a whole other history of the business and the family and the people who made it work for so many years. And I think that's where... maybe Central Coast people, I don't want to say, again, I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to say they miss stuff, but everyone, I think, needs to be reminded of their history or why things exist.
Yeah. I still miss the Basque House in Guadalupe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never got to that one. I did a feature on a grocery store that was closing in Guadalupe this past, I believe it was December. And, you know, obviously when a closure happens in a downtown like that, that is, you know, probably struggling to find, you know, what's next. And you do the history, you just realize what a robust and wonderful Main Street Guadalupe is.
So my hunch is that type of story gets you a surprising reader that may have no connection or knowledge of Guadalupe, but is tied to the human interest side of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that reader, I don't know, may be in Novato or in Redding or the middle of Shasta County somewhere.
Yeah.
When you hear from them.
Yeah, I do get feedback from people from all over about a place that, and they, this, the email's one line, like, I now want to visit, or I want to go and see this maybe before it's gone. Those are just a note to your list. Those are the best emails to get. those are top notch, right? If someone wants to come off the road or even come through this region and really spend time, I think we, and I'm talking about we as Central Coast off the 101 or Central California's off I-5 have, I think, been defined as for a long time since the freeway system as sort of the flyover state of California, right? The drive-through, like, you know, go as fast as you can, get your in and out, and get to Newport Beach or wherever you're going, right? And I want to think that we're becoming more of a destination unto itself and less of a stopover. So,
yeah, and that's important. Back to the journalism side of this, because you bring an interesting perspective. My hunch is that it is sometimes very difficult, or challenging at least, to not be sitting in the same newsroom with 30 or 40 other people. Yes, you can do your team calls and things like that on a daily or weekly basis, I'm sure, are very important. But the frustration of, hey guys, I'm all alone in San Luis County, and I'd like some mentorship back and forth here that we don't seem to get. My hunch is you're not as far away from the San Francisco office as some of your peers are, but that it still becomes a challenge as a journalist.
Right, and we address that. We have an annual all hands meeting in May, and so I'm pretty fresh off of that, and that's a real time to connect in person with the people you're working with every day. Some of those people, frankly, are, I don't want to say I get starstruck, but I read their bylines. I read them prior to when I worked there. I will read them after. They're real top-notch journalists, writers, you know, creators. We do videos. We do multimedia. So it's really good, yes, to see them in person. Last time I was there, we went and had drinks on top of the Chronicle building. And just, I mean, just being in the, as someone who watched like Fincher's Zodiac, just being in the Chronicle building to me was just like, I couldn't believe it. It was like, for me, it was like being, at a movie premiere of a movie that I got to be in or something like that. But yes, is it lonely or isolating here on the Central Coast? I came up in a career where I worked in full and robust and fully staffed newsrooms. So I got that at the front end of my career. Do I miss that? I miss that in general. I miss that for every publication up and down the state. I miss the fact that people who are coming into the profession right out of college or grad school are probably not going to have that same experience. But also, you know, part of me feels like there's a lot of autonomy here, and that's somewhat what it takes to do this job.
Is there any part of this that the San Francisco folks look at and say, gee, we'd like to expand this? What part of your – I mean, you've gone from being the Central Coast editor to the Central California editor.
Sure.
I'm sure that's kind of a two-edged sword. It's very challenging and more time-consuming and harder to juggle, but it also gives you a chance to tie things together better. Are there areas that you wish there were more opportunities to report on?
Oh, absolutely. I think two answers to this question. One is, you know, expansion editors generally start off as part-time employees. And that's, you know, mostly I think because there's probably a mutual vetting process, and there's probably also a vetting process that the bigger vetting process is, are people going to be into this place that we're starting to report on? And if I'm being totally honest, it took us a while to get going on the Central Coast. You know, a story here or there would do okay. Obviously, everything is tracked by data and analytics, so we know exactly who's reading and how many people and how for how long and where. And it took a minute. I think my breakthrough story, strangely, was I was kind of running out of things. I needed something that was going to attract attention to readers, so I went and followed Bill Murray around the AT&T for a day. And I guess we kind of figured we'd take a flyer, and he's a big name, and he was probably going to do something funny or fun or, you know, mirthful, magical. And, you know, this story took a couple of twists and turns, and yeah, it did its thing. And so we realized, okay, I think we have something in this region. And I think readership really, it started to just kind of snowball from them. And we could get a little more esoteric or a little bit more into the smaller stories from there. Since I've started, obviously my role's expanded. We've also expanded expansion in general. Ashley Harrell, who is now the National Parks Bureau Chief, now has a team of, I think, three or four folks, one in the Pacific Northwest, one in Montana, one down in Arizona, covering all things national parks for the entire, you know, basically Western States region. We have an LA Bureau, Farley Elliott, who's a Cal Poly grad, is Bureau Chief there. There's Paula Mejia, who's a culture editor, Aaron Rohde, who's an outdoors editor, Karen Palmer, who's a food editor, who also just got promoted to full-time. They have a photographer. So I think, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I'm here. I think some of the expansion areas and their ability to grow, and Hearst and Grant's ability to see, you know, where growth happens, have happened as at least a side result of this space, this area continuing to grow and do well. Would I love to have a bureau in Santa Barbara, a bureau in Monterey, a bureau in Fresno, a bureau in Bakersfield, and people scattered out throughout this region? Yes, absolutely. Is that a probability or a possibility? I don't know.
I think one area we didn't cover, and I'm sorry I didn't mention it before. Mm-hmm. I think the entire region is to some extent one of the major breadbaskets of the United States.
Yep.
And the immigration issue is going to probably come into play. It has been reasonably under the radar for the Central California area, but I'm wondering if you kind of watch your back on that one every day.
We do. We have a lot of editorial interest in covering, especially immigration and ICE raids. I've done some recent reporting. We have a freelancer whose name is Susanna Baron, and she has done some wonderful reporting for us, and will continue to. We've broken a few stories on raids. That is, I guess, to say the least, it's tricky coverage, because we have to be careful, obviously, foremost, that we get it right, and we have to protect these individuals and these families who are being affected most by it. And at the same time, we have to really try and attempt to tell their stories and do it right. And I think there is extra sensitivity in this region writ large, in the valley, in places like Ventura County. Because these are your friends, these are your neighbors. We are deeply connected, to each other in this region. And I think it's important that we do this coverage now and we do it right. Yes, it's a big deal.
Well said. Thank you very much from that standpoint. The balance of California news to the rest of the country, I think, probably comes into play sometimes. Is we've talked mostly about the Bay Area Bay Area reader. You know, the 25 million plus regular readers you have are not all in San Francisco, obviously,
right?
Or even all in California. Is the expansion of what SFGate is getting noticed? The people SFGate's getting noticed by outside of California, is that affecting the nature of your stories?
I don't think. Yeah, I want to say the short answer to that question. I'll give you one word answer. This interview. The short answer is no. I don't think. You know, we don't look at our demographics and say it's trending really well in Minneapolis, for example. But we do, I think, look at what resonate things. Stories have a life of their own, and in this moment in 2025, again, you can track a story's progress. You can see who's reading it, why it's taking off, and we can divine a lot of things from it. And then a lot of things is just sort of that old internet black magic, right? But I think what informs our decision in a newsroom, if I'm going to sort of generalize, is the one plumb line through my entire career is what is a compelling story? When I get a reaction when the room doesn't fall dead silent when I give a pitch. When I get in, you know, like when Katie Dowd goes, ooh, or Grant looks up from his computer and kind of gives me like a, oh, like, okay. Like that's kind of when it's like first date magic, right? Yeah. You kind of know. Yeah. Or
sometimes the silence is the same reaction as you say that too. Yeah. As my listeners know on a regular basis, I talk too much, and I always make sure that towards the end of the program that my guest has a chance to kind of give us a parting thought from your standpoint. What would you like Central Coast listeners to KCBX to know about what you do and what SF Gates does that we should pay attention to?
I think, you know, SF Gate early on, it's been around since 1994, and it's had several identities. You mentioned one of the big ones was it used to be the homepage, you know, for the San Francisco Chronicle. And I think Grant's pitch when he came on as editor-in-chief was to do kind of a New York magazine style. And I don't know how familiar all the readership is with the New York publications, but New York Magazine is not the New Yorker. It's not the New York Times. It's not the New York Post. It's maybe a little more, I don't want to say salacious, but, you know, celebrity front-facing, where they talk about TV shows. They talk about fashion trends. They talk about things like that. But within every issue of New York Magazine, and usually on the cover, is a very deeply reported feature story, which is very newsworthy and obviously very topical, and I think tries to capture for a moment what people are actually talking about. It's not too highbrow. It's not too lowbrow. It's not too sensational. It's not too gritty. It's something that folks can digest, and they can, you know, maybe learn a thing or two or be activated in their communities because of it. And I think that's the void that SF Gate in this very segmented and personalized media landscape. We're not trying to be all things to all people, but we're definitely trying to give people a connection to the places where they live. And I hope to be a part of that.
Yeah. Well put. And I'm glad you could come join us for this. As I said earlier, I wasn't expecting the fact that you live out Los Osos Road from the station that
no one expects anyone to be living in Los Osos.
Oh, well, if you're local, an awful lot of people live there.
That's true. Yeah. More people than are moving there, yeah. Actually.
This has been Central Coast Voices. I want to remind you folks that this is a recorded program today. So if you have any comments you want to share with us, send them to voices@kcbx.org. I will share them with our guests, and also we can review them with our team. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be here. I'm not quite sure what her program is yet, but she will always do a great job with us. This is, of course, a production of KCBX Public Radio, and thank you to Brad Kyle, our in-studio engineer. Again, you can correspond with us at voices@kcbx.org, and we're glad you could be part of the program. And thank you to Andrew Pigeon, the Central Coast or Central California editor for SF Gate, a magazine or publication I would suggest everybody check out. This has been Central Coast Voices.